Support for this podcast comes from Appcast. You may have heard of Appcast. They've been the global leader in programmatic job advertising for the last 10 years. But now, they're so much more. Following their acquisition of Bayard, they now offer a whole suite of recruitment marketing solutions. Still driven by their industry-leading tech, data-driven approach, and world-class team of experts. Need to fill a funnel of qualified applicants? Head to appcast.io to learn more. That's appcast.io.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi there, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 579 of the Recruiting Future podcast. In episode 573, we explored the power of employee value propositions. I want to follow that up by having a similar conversation about employer branding. As companies reinvent their employee experience post-pandemic or look to rebuild their reputation post-layoffs, employer branding has never been more critical, particularly for employers recruiting in challenging talent markets. Definitions are fundamental here, because in the same way that developing an EVP isn't employer branding isn't recruitment marketing. My guest this week is John Tarrant, Managing Partner at DNA. DNA is a UK-based employer branding agency with an impressive client list and vast experience in helping employers develop employer brands that are compelling, distinctive, and drive tangible value for the organisation. Hi, John, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Please, could you introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Hi, everyone. My name's John Tarrant. I'm the founder and managing partner of a company called DNA based in Bristol. We're thought and practice leaders, both in helping clients define their EVP and employer brand, and then enabling them to operationalize it right across the employee lifecycle. So we help clients find, keep, and engage the talent they need to make their business successful. It usually starts with a cry for help. So if it's find, you know, the cries for help we get are, oh, I've got a great story to tell and we're just not telling it, or no one knows who we are and the only ones that do know the bad stuff, or we're spending a fortune on a cost per hire. We need a direct model to get it down. So that's the find. If it's the keep and engage bit, it's normally a cry for help around attrition, particularly early attrition or EMPS scores or lack of cohesion and consistency across the organization. So yeah, that's what we do. It's EVPs and employer brands implemented and operationalized. We love a cheesy phrase, Matt, at DNA. So what we do is we increase the quality, decrease the cost, and ensure a legacy of improvement.
So, you know, you've obviously been working in this space for a long time. You've kind of seen kind of lots of things in terms of, you know, economic cycles and all that sort of stuff. But we have gone through a very strange time in the last few years. What are you seeing with your clients at the moment in terms of the challenges that they have in the talent market?
So the sort of challenges we're seeing at the moment, I guess, you know, number one, there are still more good jobs than there are people to do them. Employers have to work really hard if they're going to ensure that their offer is distinct, so uniquely them in a crowded marketplace. If it's authentic, that, you know, what they're selling on the outside and the inside matches the true reality. And they've got to work hard to make it compelling. You know, their EVP, their employer brand, their talent strategy is going to have to work hard for them day after day. So, you know, number one, there's more good jobs than there are people to do them. I think number two, certainly what we've seen this year in 2023 is lots of clients, as they are planning for 24 and beyond, their business plans are predicated on what we've described as fewer better people. So we're focusing more on quality of hire within their business plan. You know, they want to keep growing the top line. They want to grow their revenues. They want to grow their profits, but they're probably going to do that with comparatively fewer people. So they've got to make sure that the opportunity cost of not having the right people in the on the right seat at the right time is too great for their business. So our job as their sort of trusted partner is not just to hire people who are going to be there on day one. Our job is to hire people who are going to be there on day one of year two and day one of year three, so that they, you know, they are hiring people who will thrive in their environment and succeed and stay. And the quality of hire thing, you know, when we set objectives for clients, this year feels like it's been the year of a success in role. So when we're hiring when we're helping clients hire salespeople, we're focusing on that success in role KPI. So again, we're not getting people who are just there on day one, who last year or the year before would have got the tills ringing, start hitting their targets in 3 months or 6 months. The focus on quality of hire and success in role is making sure we're hiring people who are getting the tills ringing within 6 weeks. So success in role is key. I think, you know, the old talent market used to be sort of shades of grey, Matt, where, you know, everybody broadly did okay. But we're seeing more black and white, where the winners are really winning and maybe some of the losers are struggling a little bit. Some of the losers maybe missed a trick on candidate experience, where, you know, candidates know their worth. They're expecting a genuine experience. They're not just expected to be processed by an ATS. Since COVID, candidates feel, you know, they feel that they're entitled to greater communication, which they are. They'll respond well to a quicker process. They'll respond well to an engaging process. They have much higher expectations around ESG and diversity, and they don't want just words, that, you know, they want proof. We've been approached by a couple of organizations. One is a chemical polluter, I guess you'd describe it. Another one is an arms manufacturer. They're saying, it's not that we can't, it's not that we're not punching our weight in our early years recruitment. We're not getting anything, not getting quantity or quality or anything. And that's because the early years talent are voting with their feet, and they're only going to apply to people who match their values. So, you know, the early years market, in the same way that the talent market is evolving all the time, is continuing to evolve. I think one of the challenges in early years, you know, our friends at Connector shared some stats with me the other day that rejected offers and did not start, we call them DNSs, for grads are running at 26%. So that's a huge amount of effort if you're only going to get 74% of people who've gone all the way through that process, so actually rock up on day one. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of challenges. I guess one of the other ones that maybe frustrates us and lots of our talent partners who we talk to on a daily basis is the lack of metrics. You know, you can't improve what you don't accurately measure, whether it's cost per hire, time to hire, the cost source and outcome of every candidate, how many go through first interview, second interview, offered, accepted, turn up on day one, are still there in month three and month 12. You know, frankly, if they applied that same process to how they engage their customers, they'd never sell another thing. But it's okay. I mean, the joy of our job is that the flip side of those challenges, you know, are the opportunities, and there are loads. So I mentioned candidate experience. You know, from a recruiter's point of view, you don't need a big budget to deliver an exceptional candidate experience. You can be flexible, you can be agile. There's a stat, it's the wrong number, but it's something like 74% of buying decisions are based on emotion, not logic. So it's how do you want those candidates to feel, because that's going to get them to yes, more importantly than just processing them. You're always going to reject more people than you hire. So, yes, you can make that a branded process. You can build a great talent pool off it. You can use that talent pool for referrals. You can make all of them a fan before they become an employee. And for a number of clients, where all their potential employees are existing or potential customers, that's really important. So, yes, you know, there are lots of challenges, but there are opportunities everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And there's a combination there of things that are peculiar to the last few years and things that have just been an issue for an eternity. And particularly the bit about the data, it's a real shame that hasn't been fixed quicker. I think also a lot of things there really underline why employer brand is so important. So I wanted to kind of dive into employer branding for sort of the rest of the conversation. And what I've noticed is with the kind of explosion of interest in employer brand work over the last few years, there's lots of jargon, there's lots of phrases, and everyone seems to have different definitions about employer brand, talent brand, employee value proposition. So, you know, give us your definition. What's your definition of the difference between an employer brand and an employer value proposition?
Okay, it's a really good point. Before we go on the journey with any clients, you know, we have the same conversation about, you know, look, it's really important to be clear, you know, number one, on your definitions. So that's sort of rooted at the start of the whole process, which is really important if you're going to have a successful process. It's also really, you know, it's really important for stakeholder engagement within those organizations. So really clear on your definitions, and also really clear on what the EVP and the employer brand has got to deliver for the business, deliver for the bottom line, deliver for the people, deliver for the customer, so that everything you do is a means to an end, not an end in itself. So setting those objectives and recognizing it's not a vanity project are absolutely key. From an EVP point of view, you're right, it has morphed a little bit. You know, it used to be all about the promise, you know, come on in, everyone, the water's lovely. Whoever you are, you know, if you've got a pulse, we'll probably have you. That changed to give and get. So it was, come on in, everyone, the water's lovely. You know, we can offer you this, this, and this. Isn't that great? However, in return, what we need to get from you is this, this, and this. And if you can't bring those things, then nicely, there's a job for you somewhere, but it's not with us and all bets are off. Since COVID, actually, it's probably changed again and it's matured to, you know, good EVP and good employer branding is good for business. So it's matured into something more solid. So we define an EVP as a statement of intent as to what you stand for as an employer and how you want to be known in the markets and audiences that matter to you. That's it, is that statement of intent bit. And then as far as the employer brand is concerned, you know, employer branding is your strategy to appeal to current and future talent. We always put the current bit first. People often forget to look inside, but it's your strategy to appeal to current and future talent. The simplest definition of a brand is brand equals identity plus reputation. And you build your reputation, or you earn your reputation every day through repetition and consistency and through evidence.
And has that, you know, you kind of mentioned that there's been a lot of change in employer brand and things like that. How have things changed since the pandemic, and why is it so important now to focus on it?
Well, funny, bizarrely, I had a conversation with a marketing director at a client a couple of weeks ago who told me there's no such thing as employer branding and was absolutely adamant, which was a bit odd because when I Googled it this morning, I got 426 million results. So that was a strange one. But since the pandemic, yes, it's changed. I think in terms of that current and future talent, you know, in terms of employees' expectations, it's changed. They expect a voice and they expect that voice to be heard. So when we're delivering that brand to employees who frankly have got to buy it every day, and they're the ones who deliver on the promises you make to customers, they're the ones who, frankly, we've got a choice. It can either be transactional employment where we turn up and we pay them, but that's as far as the love goes. Or they could fizz into work every day, bring that talent back to your organization week after week, full of those intrinsic motivators to do the right thing. But they're only going to do that if they're trusted, if they've got an element of flexibility, if they've got a voice, and if their goals align with your goals and your purpose. One of the things we've seen is that people seek meaning in their work now more than ever. They recognize they spend a lot of time at work and they want to spend it with people they want to spend it with, doing something purposeful. So a lot of organizations since the pandemic have had to sort of stop and pause and press reset. You know, they say to us, you know, God, we knew what we were going into COVID, but now, you know, we're hybrid, or now, you know, we're working in a more flexible way and the market's moved on and, you know, we've adjusted in a number of other ways. I'm not quite sure who we are and what we stand for anymore. So they've had to sort of stop and pause and press reset. I think from applying your internal, your employer brand internally, organizations have had to work harder because, you know, yes, we've got hybrid working. You know, we've got people who joined during COVID who basically didn't meet anybody else for some significant time. Even the ones who were there before, during and after, you know, this thing about the thinning of work relationships is very real across lots of different organizations. So, you know, there are lots of challenges to overcome as far as employer branding since COVID, but I think, you know, probably two things. One is this thing about pressing reset. I knew what we were going into COVID, but we now need to stop and pause, have that sort of watershed moment so that we recognize what's got us to here isn't going to get us to where we need to get to. But again, there's loads of opportunities. So we've got a tech client where we really maximize the working from anywhere opportunities for them. So rather than always having to rely on hiring people from within the M25, spoke to one of the line managers. His last two hires, one was from Moldova and the other one was from somewhere in Pennsylvania. I'm never going to meet them, but they're fabulous and they're part of the team.
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. And I think that you mentioned there that companies are having to redefine what they are in terms of talent because businesses have changed, and also, as you say, work has changed as well and people's expectations have changed. I suppose if you add all that together, then add to that the issue about reputation, you know, as you say, there's a generation coming into the workforce who are very strong on matching values in terms of who they work for. There's also lots of employers who've been through layoffs, have had lots of things that have kind of negatively impacted their reputation as an employer. So I think that, you know, a lot of people listening will fall into one or maybe even all of those categories. So what should employers be doing to rescue their employer brand to do that reset and that rebuild?
Stop and pause, I think, is the first bit. Recognize that, look honestly inwardly and, recognize that bit about what's got us to here isn't going to get us to where we need to. If it's good business, if it's good for the bottom line, it's good for the people, it's good for the customer, then it needs a clear plan around it. And although, it's as an organization, we've used beautiful creative work, beautiful digital work, beautiful everything, it's underpinned by really boring things like structure, discipline, process, great project management, setting really clear objectives. So it's about having a clear process. And it's also, I would say this obviously, it's also about selecting the right partner. There's a lot of really good employer brand and EVP agencies out there, but frankly, our biggest competitor isn't them. It's customers either doing nothing or doing it themselves. And that's the bit we've got to fix. So it's about having, it's about having a really clear plan. Before you do anything, you set objectives. Means to an end, not an end in itself. What's this got to do for us? What's it got to do in terms of cost per hire, time to hire, diversity, success in role, building our reputation, and. Every client is different. Every situation is different, but there'll be a set of KPIs which will increase the quality, decrease the cost, and ensure legacy of improvement. Then it's about proper discovery. So everything we do going forwards, if it's good business, it has to be based on a foundation of fact. So that discovery has got to be rigorous. And then when you're developing your EVP and your employer brand, we're a flexible, really amenable bunch of DNA, but our non-negotiables are, is if we're developing an EVP and employer brand for you, it's got to be distinct, it's got to be uniquely you, it's got to be authentic, and it's got to be compelling. We're not going to compromise in any one of those things. Otherwise, we're not going to deliver on the objectives we set out at the start. So it's very doable. It's about planning carefully, executing with flair, and measuring everything.
A quick message from our sponsor, Wonolo. Hi, everyone. I want to tell you about Wonolo. That's W-O-N-O-L-O. Wonolo stands for Work Now Locally. Wonolo enables businesses to find quality workers for on-demand, seasonal, short-term and long-term work. Ditch the bulky paperwork and interview process and use Wonolo to find quality workers fast and get work done even faster. With flexible workers and no platform fees, you can save on operating costs, meet demand and maximise earnings with ease. Wonolo is available in over 100 markets, including Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, New York and Seattle. Get workers who are ready to work and spend less time finding them with Wonolo. Go to www.wonolo.com/pod. That's www.wonolo.com/pod and take the stress out of finding workers.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.
It's now illegal in 2023 to have any kind of podcast without talking about technology and AI. So it's probably a good time to ask you about that. It's been a very interesting year in terms of leap forwards in technology and artificial intelligence. What are you seeing that the impact of that in things like employer branding and employer branding projects and the way that employers are thinking?
There are a lot more frustrated employers out there who either chose the wrong technology, can't implement it cohesively, then there are happy ones. I think the opportunity, we talked about challenges and opportunities. There are opportunities there to speed up the process because we know that speed of process is key, particularly for the, for the younger end of the workforce, speed of process is key. But, yes, there's opportunities on speed, but the gaps in reporting and the gaps in implementation and the inability to deliver a cohesive candidate experience, add to that frustration every day. When you look at technology, it should be able to make life easier. It should be able to enable a better way of working. It should be something that facilitates the right candidate experience and help them to achieve their goals. And the problem, you know, the buyer beware problem is that lots of the technology that we see implemented in organizations or the organizations are, you know, are about to buy doesn't do that. You know, there's all, you know, every day while we've been on this podcast, there'll be a bright new shiny something that's come on the market with, you know, great marketing and very well backed, you know, probably come out of somewhere in California. And, you know, the buyer beware thing is are you expressing your need in the form of a solution that you think the technology is just going to solve it? Or have you really got to the bottom of what it is that you actually need to do and deliver? So there's great opportunities in technology, but the number of clients we talk to where, yeah, the ATS is all right, but it doesn't quite do what we want it to. You know, we've got an HR information system and we'd probably give it 6 out of 10 on a good day. I've got no clue as to how we get the 4 out of 10 we haven't got yet, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And it comes back to the issues around strategy and data. And the technology is now amazing, but it's never going to work if you don't have that strategy in place first.
We were asked to go and talk to a board who are having problems around internal comms. You know, national organization, salespeople all over the country, 2 or 3 chunky offices in different locations. You know, there wasn't one version of the truth. The rumor mill was rife. The company, the HR team, and the C-suite just didn't own the comms narrative, which was the vacuum that they were needing to fill. So we were trying to dig under the skin as to what a potential comms and engagement solution might look like. And it transpired they already had 3 intranets that weren't used, plus Yammer, plus something else.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking about a bonfire of all of the technology they had, which was just weird. It was a bizarre. You know, those discussions when you go back and get in the car, I think, what just happened? It was one of those.
What we need is we need another system to rule them all, to unify all the other ones. So as a last question, sort of focusing on the future, we've seen a lot of change in employer brand in the last few years. You've really highlighted a lot of the issues that still exist. What's next? Where do you think we're going in 2, 3, 5 years' time?
Future of employer branding is really strong. When we talk to clients, they go, look at our technology platform, it's very secure. Look at our product offer today and our product and service offer to come. That's really strong. Look at our overall brand equity. That's strong. Look at our cash position. It's really strong. We're really well backed. We're really well led. But the bit where we have risk is in our people agenda, because if we can't nail the people agenda, you know, maybe all bets on all of those other elements of our brand equity are going to be compromised. So the people agenda is always going to be key. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, whether that's locally in the UK or globally. You know, we've got clients all across the world. They're all singing the same song as far as that's concerned. I think employer branding is still growing up and developing. People are recognizing that it's good business and it enables good, positive business change. So again, I feel very positive about that. I think that when you look at that maturing of employer branding as good business, an enabler of good business change, you can prove ROI with, you know, whether it's success in role or cutting cost per hire or time to hire or, you know, whatever that might be, employer branding is able to prove that it creates value for an organization and is not a vanity exercise. You know, if I think of the work that DNA and, you know, I'm sure other agencies have done, we put millions, you know, an employer brand will make you money and save you money. And we can prove transparently where we put millions onto a bottom line, you know, not a tenner here or there, but millions on a bottom line. And I think people will recognize the value that employer brand can add, as far as that's concerned. And the thing always evolves. So, you know, I think the other great thing about employer branding, you know, when we talked about challenges and opportunities, there are ways to create competitive advantage, whoever you are, wherever you are, and potentially do it quite quickly. So whether that's, building reputation upstream to then earn the right to have a recruitment conversation and using and understanding social media in the right way to do that, is a great opportunity. And that shifts the dialogue and the conversation with your talent market quite quickly. 2023, we've seen a huge, huge rise in employee advocacy where, you know, you help the client use their existing employees as the most articulate and authentic advocates of the employment experience, raises a profile, builds their employer reputation, builds talent pools, penetrates hard to reach talent pools, build pride and purpose within the existing organization. So employer branding isn't just recruitment advertising in old money, as lots of people recognize it. You know, they now see it as something essential that's effectively the golden thread all the way through that employment experience, from, you know, your first contact with someone as a remote stranger all the way through the selection process, induction, onboarding, the employment experience, all the way through to how they exit all the organization and how you treat them as alumni. That's a branded experience, and every touch point is an engagement opportunity. So I think, you know, if you're going to describe employer branding, it might be employer branding is getting through that awkward adolescent phase, and now people are realizing that actually it's not recruitment advertising and it's not about some clever campaign themes. This is actually really good business that could be the golden thread all the way through our business that makes it different and special to work here, and why people will fizz into work eager to make a difference every Monday.
John, thank you very much for talking to me. My thanks to John. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter, Recruiting Future Feast, and get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app, or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.